The Vision app is the best place to find a growing range of homegrown, on-demand audio to help you look to God daily. You can listen to Faith and Fostering with Christians chatting about foster care in an Australian context. Plus, be encouraged by Pastor Terry Nightingale's four-minute devotions, with new episodes added each week in the free Vision Christian Media app. If you don't already have the app on your smartphone or tablet, download it now from vision.org.au/app. Vision. A biblical perspective on life, culture, and current events. This is 2020 on Vision.
Well, Christian social commentator David Robertson's back with us. He's been reflecting on that biblical verse that says the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. It comes from the Bible book of Habakkuk. And sometimes it's so good to pause and reflect on what that might mean in today's world. David Robertson writes for newspapers, for magazines. He's the author of a number of books. He's also the minister of Scotts Kirk Presbyterian Church in Newcastle in New South Wales. David, a special welcome back to 2020.
Yeah, nice to be with you again, Neil. And nice to be discussing this particular passage, actually, because we often discuss political issues, which is right. But as Habakkuk looked at the political situation of his day, which was pretty desperate, the Lord spoke to him. And I think what the Lord said to him about 3,000 years ago is pretty good for us today as well.
Let's just touch on this for a moment, the context. Things were pretty desperate. And I think we're going back to around 600 BC. Evil was thriving in the world that Habakkuk was a part of. And, you know, God remained in some ways strangely silent in his day. And there might be some parallels to today. But how do you deal with the context of Habakkuk and this verse?
So the context is fascinating, because Habakkuk is basically saying, how long, O Lord, must you be silent? And I cry out to you violence, but you do not save. And I have to look at injustice, and the law is paralyzed, and justice never prevails. And things were pretty bad. And this was in Israel. And, you know, it seems as though Israel was turning away from God. And then God answers him, and the answer is amazing, because he says, you've got to look at the nations and be amazed. I'm going to send the Chaldeans, who are the Babylonians, and they're going to teach you a lesson. And it's like God saying, well, things are bad, but you ain't seen nothing yet. So, I mean, it's really, and the language that's used of a fish net that's dragging up the fish, or hooks and so on. And then he goes on to say that the Chaldeans themselves, although they're used to punish Israel, they themselves will be punished for what they do. And it talks about injustice and bloodshed and so on. And then this is the amazing bit where he says that people's labor is only fuel for the fire. The nations exhaust themselves for nothing. So he's saying basically all the things that we see. So in this world today, you know, you might worry about Ukraine. You might worry about the American elections. You might worry about China or whatever, or Australia. And God says, no, that's all empty. The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. So I think that's just a great message for Christians today to hold on to. I call it the most hopeful verse in the whole Bible.
I think we're going to agree with you there. I mean, brutal foreign armies threatening Israel. We might even recognize that there are brutal foreign armies that might be threatening Israel today as well. And the Christian community into the whole picture, because when we talk about the glory of the Lord filling the whole earth, I imagine this is not just the people of Israel, but this is, you know, going back to Abraham and the promise that all of the nations of the earth would be blessed. So we're all a part of expectation of this glory. Would that be the good context in that case?
Yeah, I think so, because I think this is actually an amalgamation of two verses, because in Numbers, it talks about, Moses talks about the glory of the Lord being throughout the whole earth. And, you know, I was mentioning to you before that I'm doing this thing called Coffee with Habakkuk, which is kind of 5 minutes every day, just going through Habakkuk verse at a time, really. And yesterday I knew I was going to be down in Sydney, and I knew we'd got on to chapter 2, verse 14. And for me, there's nowhere more beautiful than the Sydney Botanic Gardens. So I went and filmed there, and I just love that. I mean, I love that. But when you look at the creation, that's the glory of the Lord. It reflects God. But actually, there's a deeper glory. So the glory in the tabernacle, the glory in heaven. And I think what Habakkuk is promising is the Moses thing is the glory of the Lord, and then the other verse is Isaiah, which talks about the knowledge of the Lord being about the world. And I think when you combine that together, you get this wonderful idea that what we see in the creation is just a foreshadow. It's not the end thing. It's like in Job. Job's looking at the outer fringe of the stars, and he says this is just the outer fringe of his power. So, I mean, I think that's extraordinary. I think there's such a tremendous hope and promise in that. I live in Whitebridge, and I can walk down to Dudley Beach. I mean, I don't really want to advertise it too much, because whenever I go down, there's hardly anyone there. And it's just, I mean, I love going down in the morning because it's just absolutely glorious. It's beautiful. And I think about that, and then I think about, you know, in my church on Sunday when we're worshiping, I want that sense of the glory of God that makes even Dudley Beach look artificial.
I know when we talk about glory, sometimes it can seem like an airy-fairy type of a term. And when you talk about the beauty of what you see, the glory of God, sometimes we reflect on the glory of God being, and I know people get into, you know, some deeper thoughts about it, the weight of the reputation of Almighty God. But the beauty aspect here, this is very powerful, and somehow or other we can appreciate beauty, and maybe we appreciate beauty all the more when we have God's Spirit who dwells within. How do you reflect on this word glory, though, David, and, the glory of the Lord?
Yeah, absolutely that. I mean, the Hebrew word that's used can mean heavy, and I tend to think back to my old hippie days, something you would never know, you know. You say, hey, man, that's heavy, man. Oh, man, that's heavy, you know. Like, a topic is really heavy. And actually, the kind of the old hippie slang wasn't too far off it, you know. Wow. You know, I mean, I guess the kind of American slang now would be, oh, that's awesome, man, that's awesome. But heavy, oh, heavy, man, heavy. Well, I think God's glory is heavy, but it's also beautiful. And I think that we grasp that when, you know, you have that experience. I was down, as I say, at Dudley Beach about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and there was a sunrise that, as the sun rose, it looked like a door. And honestly, I felt I was in some kind of sci-fi movie. It looked like a portal into heaven. And it was a stunning thing. I managed to get a picture of it. And yet, it's something that you can describe. It's something, you say reputation, but it's even more, it includes that, but it's much, much more than that. And I think it's that aspect of beauty. And again, for us, I think for us as Christians, there's so much ugliness in this world. I mean, I could list a whole range of things that are very ugly just now. And we are promised that the beauty of the Lord will fill the whole earth. I mean, Psalm 27 talks about, let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us. You know, and I think that's a real encouragement for Christians, and also to seek after it and to seek to reflect the beauty of Christ as much as we can.
I think that is a wonderful contrast, ugly versus beauty, and to see the glory of the Lord reflected. We might be thinking, you know, does that just mean God's creation? And, you know, I think we can all just appreciate being in a place from time to time where the beauty of creation is so evident. But what about the beauty that is within individuals? Is the glory of the Lord reflected in creation, as in his people, the people that he has created to reflect his glory? Is this something to do with, you know, the image of God and how that actually comes? And is there an ugliness in the sinful nature that is displaced by the beauty of the glory of the Lord when he is upon us? You know, there's a lot in that, but give us your thoughts here around ugly versus beauty and people.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're 100% right. And I'll tell you why you're 100% right with that. Is it's back to Genesis. So in Genesis, you get God created the seas, God created the mountains, God created the animals, God created the vegetation. And he saw it was good, he saw it was good, he saw it was good. And then God created humanity, and he saw it was very good. That's what it said. And then it's pointed out that human beings are created in the image of God, both male and female, are created in the image of God, which again is a key verse for our culture, as for every culture, to be honest. But I think that that beauty has become tainted by sin. So every human being still retains the image of God to some degree, but it, if I can put it this way, it's been perverted by sin, and there's an ugliness that creeps in. So right now I can think of humanity. There are many beautiful things that are occurring within humanity. You know, I think of a mother feeding her child or someone caring for the sick or whatever. But equally, there are people dropping bombs on people. There are people who, there's domestic violence. There's, if you pick up your newspaper today, just go through, you'll find frauds and cheats and rape, and it's what human beings are doing to one another. And that's such an ugly thing because it's a defacement of the beauty of God. And then what happens is, as we become Christians, we get a new creation. And so the beauty of God is reflected in his people. And that's why, you know, you get this idea of being a light. You are the light of the world. It's a light not reflecting our own goodness, but it's a light reflecting the beauty of Christ. So when the psalmist prays, "Let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us," that's in fact the best form of witness that there can be, that people would look and say, "Wow, there's something different about them," not because of our own inherent beauty, but because of a beauty that comes from knowing and following Christ.
And Habakkuk was a prophet, and you know, you can't deny this fact when you've got this sort of beautiful wording about the glory of the Lord. A prophet, a priest, involved in the worship of God in the temple, and we might say, was he talking about things of the past or of our present or even the future that is to come? How do you reflect on this glory of the Lord, that knowledge of the glory of the Lord, in that prophetic sense of what might be coming?
Yeah, I think he talks about past, present and future. So, for example, in the next chapter, in chapter 3, he says God came down from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran, and he's talking there about you know, the Mosaic law and everything being given. He talks about it in the past. I think he's talking about the present, but I think most of all he is talking about the future. It's funny because he's being told that Jerusalem is going to be destroyed and that the Israelites, Isaiah at the same time prophesying at the same time, and Jeremiah are going to say the same thing. And it must have seemed like the end of the world. And Habakkuk is also being told, no, it's not the end of the world. The promise made to Abraham that he would be a blessing to all nations will be fulfilled, and the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord. Now, I think that's true in terms of the creation, but I also think it is true in terms of the gospel being proclaimed to every nation, and not just proclaimed, but being believed. And again, my heart has been heavy and despondent about what I see going on in the world just now. And it's only when I lift my eyes beyond that and see this promise that I realize, nah, what's going on in the world, it's temporary, it's relatively trivial in comparison with the glory of the Lord. And then you can apply that at a personal level. So, you know, some of the listeners may identify with this in terms of experiencing sickness, fear of death, the, you know, a loved one having died, you know, tremendously sad and difficult circumstances, breakup of relationships and all this kind of stuff. And it can be so overwhelming. And the only way to overcome that overwhelmingness is to have a greater overwhelmingness, if you like, of the ugliness being overcome by beauty. So I think I've mentioned this before to you, that I knew a lady once came to me and was just telling me about how horrendous her life was. So many circumstances, illness, broken relationships, poverty, and so on. And I said to her, look, I can't promise you that if you become a Christian, you'll become rich, you'll become healthy, you'll never have any problems. But I can promise you this, that when you come to know Christ, you come to know somebody who can take the ugliest thing and make it beautiful. And I mean, she burst into tears at that and just was, if only that was true. And I said, it is true. And I quoted Isaiah, he gives me beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning. I think that's what Habakkuk is saying. And I think what we need to be very careful, you and I are both Christian commentators, is we can easily do the woe is me bit, or we can do a kind of false comfort, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. But actually, we should do the kind of woe is me in the sense of seeing the uglinesses in the world, but we need to see the greater beauty and the deeper beauty. And I think that's what Habakkuk points us to. And that's why I call this verse the most hopeful verse in the whole Bible.
And so this expectation of beauty, and for some of us, as you really rightly say, people who are in the middle of their emptiness and their sadness and the violence and the brutality of their own lives. And that's, yes, that's here in Australia, not to mention all of the challenges that are going on around the world. But when we talk about what it is to have faith in Christ, you describe this so, so beautifully, David, that this beauty that we anticipate, this is really a description of the hope that we have as believers. And this is hope that, you know, you don't have when you don't believe, but can come to you in the moment you first believe. I mean, this is amazing sort of transition of what your Christian faith brings as substance to your life. This is very powerful, isn't it?
Extremely powerful. And to the listeners, we need to be very careful. The word hope, but I'm using it in the biblical sense, not in the modern sense. Sense is kind of hope I'm going to get a pay raise, have a good day. I hope in the modern sense means wishful. This is not wishful thinking. Hope in it's described in the Bible is absolute. It's foundational. It's certainty. And this is earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters. Habakkuk's not saying, I hope this will work out. Whatever happens, whatever the Babylonian happens to you personally, this will, if you like, you can take that to the bank. And I think that, again, for Christians, it stops what's going on in the world. You know, people say, no, the world is destroyed. And, you know, if you like, and die 1 minute before a time, my time that is appointed, and all these different things. You know, my times are in God's hands. God works all things for the good of those who love him. And these verses only make sense if the promises that are made in the Bible are not wishful thinking, but real certainty.
David, a little, I guess you could call even this a ministry opportunity here, because so many believers will pray a prayer, show us your glory. You know, sometimes you'll be at your church prayer meeting and somebody will say, you know, show us your glory, Lord. I wonder whether there's something special in that prayer that for people who are in the middle of that emptiness or that sadness or the brutality that comes in this world, whether that might be a powerful prayer to pray.
Yes and no. Yes, because, it's a beautiful prayer to pray, and I think we should pray it, but we couldn't stand God's glory. You know, we would just be overwhelmed by it. And I think we should pray that we should grasp that the Lord would give us a capacity to feel, to know, and to understand. I think we need a much, much deeper lives. And I would say to Christians, you know, very often Christians, they're like people who get married in modern society. The wedding day is the big day, and it's all downhill from there as far as they're concerned. You know, I think the Christian life is almost the other way. I think you become a Christian, and it keeps building up. It should keep getting better and better and better. And you should grow in depth and in your relationship and see more of the glory of God. I mean, Paul at the end of his life says this, I pray that I may know him. You think, Paul, don't be daft. You've written a third of the New Testament. You've planted half the churches in the world. What do you mean you want to know Christ? And he wants to know him better. And that's what we need. And I think, show us your glory in that sense. It's really show us your beauty. You know, may I see the beauty of Christ? I think sometimes when Christians pray, show us your glory, they mean kind of like power, and they're almost meaning give me power. Whereas in reality, I think what we should be praying is, Lord, give us sight, give us hope, let us understand this. I think if you grasp Habakkuk 2:14, it changes your whole life. But it's not easy to grasp when the world around seems to be collapsing and you ask God how long and he says you ain't seen nothing yet, there's much worse to come. But in reality, he's also saying, yeah, but this is the big aim, this is the big goal, and this will happen.
I need to tie a loose end together or two. Let me take you back to something you said towards the beginning of this conversation, where you were talking about the glory of the Lord as something of a demonstration of the success of the power of the gospel. The power of the gospel. Sometimes we think, you know, we underrate the power of the gospel, but it's going to be, no doubt, the power of the gospel that ushers in the glory of the Lord in that time, present and future. Any thoughts here, just as we wrap some things up here, the power of the gospel, is this a promise of the worldwide success of what God has said he'd do in his purposes?
Yeah, well, I think it's also the power that Jesus said, you'll do greater things than these. So, I mean, maybe a good way for me to wrap up this, and I've very much enjoyed looking at this, Neil, is thinking of a Jehovah's Witness lady who came to my church in the north of Scotland. And, you know, she and I would talk. She would go to the Jehovah's Witnesses in the morning and come to us at night. And she and I would talk, and we'd talk about the Trinity, and we'd talk about hell and all these different things. And then one Sunday I was preaching, and I looked at her, and I actually saw her physically change in front of me. And I've never seen it before, and I've never seen it since. It was just a physical transformation. So she came to the door and said, I need to see you this week sometime. And I said, yeah, I guess so. And I went up to see her a couple of days later, and she said, I've become a Christian. And I said, what was the difference? You know, because we've been arguing Jehovah's Witness, Christianity, and so on. And she said, oh, easy, the Holy Spirit. Just the Holy Spirit. And I said, yeah, I saw it. I could see that. And I think what the gospel does is the good news transforms us, you know. So, like, you're very old and you're not doing well and you're struggling. And then if you grasp what Paul says, that outwardly we're wasting away, but inwardly we're being renewed day by day. You know, just, I think it's, you know, you mentioned the prayer, let me see your glory. Well, maybe everyone is listening to this. Maybe that's what we should pray, what we should ask for. And maybe if all Christians in Australia saw the glory of God, the nation would be transformed.
Well, let's finish on this note. That is the word of the prophet Habakkuk, that Old Testament book. And it might be worth going back to it and having a little read and having a look out for that verse that we've been talking about today. The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And you might want to connect with David Robertson. He has actually been doing some videos too. You'll be able to find some links to how you can see him reflecting on these things in a series that he's calling Coffee with Habakkuk. And you'll be able to connect with David at his website, theweflea.com. Theweflea.com. David also writes articles for newspapers and magazines. Keep your eye out for those, and no doubt there'll be a host of great articles that you'll be able to access in all sorts of archives, maybe on his website, theweflea.com. David, thanks so much for another great insight today on 2020.
Privilege being with you. God bless.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.